Hello, everybody. Time again for another movie retrospective. This here was a movie that, if you remember, a couple months ago, it was now probably, when we went to FYE at the Altamont Mall, and I bought a lot of cheap-ass flicks for $2 or $3 each, and I think I posted a picture on Patreon like of all the ones I had. And I said, oh, we'll probably get around to reviewing, maybe not all of them, but some of them. And this was one of the ones that I got, so this is the one of the ones that we are reviewing. This is 28 Days Later from 2002.
Yeah, boy, that time went by, didn't it?
It did indeed.
It's hard to believe it's that old now.
Now, the interesting thing about 28 Days Later, not only is this an awesome, I'm going to call it a quasi-zombie flick, because I don't want people yelling at me that is like, they're not really zombies.
Zombie flicks aren't zombie flicks.
We'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
But this was also a very important zombie flick for the horror genre, because you have to consider that before 2002, I mean, the heyday for zombie movies was kind of like 70s to 80s. You know, you got, you know, George Romero's stuff, you got like Return of the Living Dead, you got like Reanimator, you got all that kind of
zombie
stuff. Yeah, like all the Italian flicks that came out, you know, Living Dead in the Manchester Morgue, all that kind of stuff, coming out in the 80s. After that, not so much. There was a few every now and then, like Cemetery Man that came out in the 90s. That was also Italian. Dead Alive, the Peter Jackson movie that was Australian, New Zealand, whatever it was. But awesome. Well, I probably have to review that at some point, too, because I fucking love that movie.
I actually have to finish Zombie. You've seen it. You showed it to me.
I've seen it many times.
I got like maybe one third of the way through it, and for some reason we never finished it. I don't remember what happened.
We were probably too drunk and weren't paying attention, or something else came up. I don't know.
Never did see the zombie.
Okay, well, we'll watch it one of these days. I think it's still on Shudder somewhere. But so this one, so like I said, zombies had kind of like fallen out of fashion, I guess, like as a horror subgenre. Even though there were like a few examples every now and then, but when 28 Days Later came out, it sort of like reinvigorated the entire zombie genre. Pretty much all the zombie shit that you have now, like all the zombie movies, you know, that came after that, like obviously Walking Dead, the
World War Z,
like all the books that came out, like Warm Bodies, the stuff like that, were pretty much come from this movie and the Resident Evil games.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the two things. This is where it all comes from.
This brought the idea, or at least kind of popularized the idea of the fast zombie.
As far as I know, this was the first one to do that.
Yeah, I didn't like it when I first saw it.
Yeah.
It took me a while to get used to it.
Well, like I said, technically they're not zombies, because they're not dead people returning to life. They're human beings that have been infected with a virus called rage.
Yeah, rage virus.
Now, something that's interesting to me, and I've seen this, I saw this mentioned in one review, but oddly, not in a bunch of other ones. Clearly, this owes a lot to, you know, the George Romero zombie movies, just kind of in tone and structure. But I think it's actually more similar to another movie that he did, more of an outbreak, post-apocalyptic type of movie that he did in 1973 called The Crazies. That was actually a movie about people that were infected with a virus called Trixie that was like a bioweapon that had gotten released into the water. And it made everybody either killed you or it turned you into, like, a homicidal maniac. You know what I mean? So, I don't see this movie, like, when people talk about this movie, they don't really mention The Crazies so much, except for one that I saw. But I was like, to me, it seems more like an outbreak movie than a zombie movie. And Danny Boyle, who directed it, I mean, he's kind of gone on. He said, well, I don't really consider it a zombie movie. I considered it more like a post-apocalyptic type of movie, which it is. But it has, you know, parallels to the zombie genre, and it usually gets lumped in with zombie movies, so you know. And honestly, like I said, after this came out with the fast zombies, since everybody dug that so much, because a lot of people thought it made them scarier because they're not just like shambling after you and it's like, oh, I'm gonna get you, I can just run by past you and push them over and stuff.
That's a thing of opinion right there.
Well, and I think they're both scary in their own way.
Yeah, there's, to me, ever since I was a kid, when I first stumbled across Night of the Living Dead playing for free on television, okay, in California, the whole idea of just a mass of slow-moving people. You can run, but you can't ever really get away from
because them. Because there's so many of them, and they just keep coming.
Yeah, and you can run into a house for safety, but guess what? They just keep coming.
Yeah.
And then they just keep coming. And then instead of 20, you got 200, and then you got 2,000, then you got 20,000. They knock the whole house down.
Yeah.
So, there's something about that slow motion impending doom. something that you can run from but never truly escape.
I think that's what, to me,
that reminded me of nightmares I had as a kid trying to run for something. It feels like you're running in molasses.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And that's what it felt like.
I was going to say, I think that's what a lot of people found so scary about, like, say, Jason Voorhees, who just kind of, like, moseyed after you, but, like, kind of caught up with you anyway. Also, a movie like It Follows, you know, which was kind of a recent movie where this thing was just, like, coming after you at, like, kind of just a normal pace, but it was going to get you. Like, there was an inevitability to it.
It's funny that you brought up Jason, because we just revisited Friday the 13th, part 1, 2, and 3. And I grew up with them. I loved them as I was, you know, as a kid and a, you know, young teenager, you know. But you look at those movies now, sure, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot to those movies.
No, there wasn't.
Especially 3. 3 was very flimsy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second one I kind of think is the best one. It's hard to say.
I agree with you there. I mean, I still like the first one, but I'm going to give the edge to the second one. I like the characters in the second one better.
Just those first two, really, I think out of the whole series, I just got more and more ridiculous as it went on.
Well, yeah.
Jason in space and shit.
Well, yeah, the other ones were just stupid.
Just one and two.
Yeah. But yeah, so like I said, this movie was directed by Danny Boyle. He had previously done, you know, a few other... He's most famous now probably for Trainspotting. He also did Slumdog Millionaire, which, you know, got huge accolades. I'm going to recommend, and a lot of people haven't seen this one. This is one of his early flicks, and I can't remember what year it came out. But it was called Shallow Grave. It had Ewan McGregor in it, and I think Christopher Eccleston was in it also. And he was in 28 Days Later, too. It's an awesome movie, and I think a lot of people haven't seen it, even people that are like kind of like Danny Boyle's other flicks. It's kind of like, it's not a horror movie necessarily. It's kind of like a thriller, but it has like a lot. It's kind of gory and violent, but I would recommend that if you want to watch it. Now, another thing that this movie did, like I said, other than introducing the concept of quote-unquote fast zombies, or at least people that had... They're almost like mental, like, fucking tweakers, man. They're just like coming... And they actually, to play... the infected people, they just call them the infected in the movie, they actually recruited like a bunch of athletes because they wanted this kind of propulsive thing where it's like you couldn't get away from them because they were just like running like full pelt like after you and like that there was no way that you could get away from them. So it concerns the main character who's played by Cillian Murphy, who actually got, you know, is very famous nowadays, but this was kind of one of his early films. He'd only been in a couple of indie films before this one. And he plays the character of Jim. Now, prior to him, like, he was a bicycle courier, and he got hit by a car, and he was in a coma. So he's in the hospital in a coma. Now, before we find out about that, we see a little prologue, and there's, like, a government lab. I think it's in Cambridge in England. And they're studying chimpanzees. They're studying, like, violent tendencies. And these chimps have become infected with this virus called the rage virus. Now, these animal liberation activists, like, break into the lab, and they're going to release the chimps. Now, the doctors tell them, please don't do that. They're infected with the rage virus. This is going to be really bad, but they do it anyway. And chaos inevitably ensues. So by the time Jim wakes up from his coma, pretty much the entirety of Britain has been decimated. Either everyone is dead or they've become infected. Now... astute listeners will note that The Walking Dead started pretty much in exactly the same way.
Yeah, it looks real familiar.
Waking up in the hospital. Now, I'm going to say, like, because I thought that The Walking Dead graphic novel series, I thought that started in 2003, which was a year after this movie came out. So I'm not saying that Kirkman, like, ripped this idea off. Because it's possible, here's the thing, from a storytelling point of view, if you're going to tell like a post-apocalyptic story, like a zombie apocalypse or whatever, it's like from a storytelling standpoint, it's good to have your main character, your protagonist, not be there like for the first part of the outbreak, so you don't have to have like all this build-up and setup and everything like that, because they can wake up and not know what's going on, and then you can kind of quickly catch them up on what's going on because other people have been experiencing it the whole time, and you can kind of like cut down on exposition and all that other kind of shit. You know what I mean? You don't have to show this big like build-up of society falling apart. Like once the guy wakes up, society's already fallen apart, and he just has to have, like, a five-minute scene with somebody telling him, hey, this happened, that happened, you're fucked. You know what I mean? And which is essentially what happens in this. Now, what a lot of people point out, and this is really actually one of the best shots in the movie, is that when Jim wakes up and he's in the hospital, he's all by himself and he doesn't know what the fuck is going on, he leaves the hospital and goes into the streets of London and they are completely abandoned. Now, I first saw this in the theater, and it's shot on digital video. They wanted to shoot it, and this was actually one of the very few films to do this at the time. And this was only 2002, so a lot of the, you know, commercially or, you know, consumer-grade digital cameras were not that great. So the look of this is very, like, lo-fi, you know what I mean? It still looks like shitty handheld camera, like a VHS, pretty much. Nowadays. Now, that was what he wanted it to look like specifically. He wanted, like, this kind of immediacy or, like, a documentary sort of look. So he deliberately just used these handheld cameras that you could just buy off the shelf or whatever. But what they did, so I saw this in the theater first, and when they did these, like, creepy shots of him just, like, walking around in his little hospital clothes with a little, with his shit in a little plastic bag, and it's just, like, there's, like, Westminster Abbey, and there's, like, Big Ben, and there's, like, nobody. It's just, like, fucking just garbage blowing around in the street and stuff. And I'm sitting there going, how the fuck did they film that? I'm like, that is amazing. I'm like, it didn't look like CGI. It didn't look like anything.
Matte paintings.
It was not. Okay. What they did, those are actually the streets of London, and they are actually empty. What they did was they usually filmed, a lot of times they filmed without permits, but they actually did get permits for this particular thing. They said what we did was that we would go at, like, right before dawn on Sunday morning when no one was around, and then they would just block off sections of streets and just tell everybody to get out, and then they would just film really quick, and then they would just move to, like, right, another spot. It's, like, the one part where, there's one part where there's, like, a double-decker bus that's, like, tipped over, like, in the middle of this empty street. They're, like, they put the bus there, filmed the scene, and then moved the bus away again in, like, 20 minutes. Like, so they just kind of had this crew. They were doing, like, this guerrilla filmmaking type shit. So but it still looks amazing to this day, and it's, like, super, super creepy. And I like that the beginning of the film is, like, kind of just this slow, creepy, like, emptiness, and then it just descends into this, like, frenetic, like, fast-edited madness with just, like, all these red-eyed people, like, chasing you and, like, this fucking chaotic, like, filming. So, you know, so Jim has no idea what's going on because nobody's around. He's just, like, yelling for help and everything. And then all these people, like, start running. He goes into this church and there's, like, all these dead bodies and he has no idea. And there's another really creepy scene where, you know, among all these dead bodies, he's like, hello, hello, is anybody in here? And then this one guy pops up and, like, looks at him like that. And this other guy pops up and looks at him. He's like, oh, shit. And then, like, he starts fucking running. Now, he eventually gets saved by two other survivors, Selena and Mark. Now, Selena is played by Naomi Harris, who later went on to play Moneypenny in the new James Bond movies.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's the same actress. I think this was her first, might have been her first film role, or at least her first major film role. So then, so they kind of explain to him a little bit what's going on. They eventually team up with this other, like, kind of a dad figure who's played by Brendan Gleeson, very famous Irish character actor. He's really good in everything. And him and his daughter have, like, barricaded themselves, like, up in this big tower block in their apartment. So they've survived. And he's like, well, I keep hearing these military, you know, radio transmissions. And they said they have the cure, the infection, or the answer to it, or whatever. And we have safety. We have beds and food and everything. So come find us. We're in Manchester. So that's what they do. So, like, they just kind of get together in this dad's taxi, and they head for Manchester. Now, in the third act, you kind of get to this military installation, which is there. They're in, like, this mansion, and it's fortified, and they have it all set up, and all this other kind of shit. But it turns out that the head of the little military, it's only, like, a couple of guys, like, five guys or something like that, who is played by Christopher Eccleston, who I love in pretty much everything. He's kind of like, well, here's the thing. I just put that radio thing out there because I promised my men that I would make women come here. So we were just trying to lure women here so we could, quote unquote, repopulate the earth. So so Selena and the 14-year-old girl are basically going to become sex slaves. So Jim, the main character, does not want any part of that. So he has to become sort of like this whore. He has to become sort of like a rage, you know, guy himself, just to, like, kill all these soldiers and get his, you know, get the woman and the daughter, like, away from there. Because this, they've almost kind of become an ersatz family, like, in the course of the thing. Now, one of the coolest things about this movie, like I said, too, is that, you know, like on The Walking Dead and stuff, it's like somebody gets bit, you know, by a zombie. And then, like, you have a while, like, to say goodbye to the person, and everybody's going to cry about it and everything like that. Now, the thing that's kind of horrifying about 28 Days Later is that the virus, if you don't even have, you don't even have to get bit. You can just get, like, a drop of the infected person's blood,
in
like,
your
in
eye.
Your mouth or in your eye. Or they can, like, spit on you, like, or spit in your mouth or something. And you will get, it has, like, a 5-second incubation period. You will get it immediately.
Which that makes more sense anyway.
Yeah.
Because the problem with zombie infections, as they're shown in The Walking Dead, is that there wouldn't be any zombies around because the person would be eaten. You know what I mean? The infected person is eaten.
Yeah.
Well, where are these zombies coming from? If zombies eat the infected, then how do they expand?
Yeah, you think eventually everyone would just get eaten.
Well, in this one and also World War Z, it's the process is shown very quickly. They'll attack a person and then that person turns instantly.
And then starts running off and they're all in a pack and they're just attacking.
And then the zombies don't bother that person anymore. That way, you know, they gain a member. So it makes more sense to have it like that. That it's just an infection, you know.
And you can see how scary that would be because essentially, and I saw a review that pointed this out, it's like essentially you'd have like one person that had it. They would be like a suicide bomber. Like you could put them in a crowd of people and immediately like the whole crowd would be infected. So it's like you could easily see how like a whole island nation, such as Great Britain, would be pretty much just devastated in only a few weeks' time. Because pretty much everybody would get eaten. I mean, there's not much you could do. And like I said, they don't really eat them. They just kind of like go after, they just bite them or attack them or, you know, because like I said, it's a rage virus. It's almost kind of like it amps up your anger to the point where you just become like an animal and you're just like fucking after this person. You're not like hungry, you're not eating them or anything like that. You're just attacking them. And
this movie's pretty good. I mean, especially for such a low budget movie.
It costs £5 million.
Yeah, but I think really you have to appreciate it in the context of the time. You know what I mean? The feel and the tone of this movie is very unlike the zombie movies of its day.
Yeah.
This actually, you could tell that the tone in this one inspired the tone of The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a lot of The Walking Dead was kind of ripping off some of these situations. You know,
I kind of feel like that, too.
Rogue soldiers that are trying to survive on. You know,
I mean, that's a little bit from Day of the Dead, too. Yeah. Or Dawn of the Dead. Yeah, Day of the Dead. That had, like, the rogue soldiers and shit like that. But, yeah, a lot of the aspects... Like I said, you know, the zombie subgenre, it's not, like, a huge subgenre. And as I said, Romero did a lot of this kind of stuff in his Dead films and also in The Crazies. So it's not like they just pulled this out of their ass. That, you know what I mean? There's other things that they're referring to. And actually, the guy that wrote the screenplay, Alex Garland, who was actually a really well-regarded novelist... prior to this, he actually, and I didn't know this, but he actually wrote the screenplay for Dread, the remake, the good one.
Yeah. I like the original, though.
Yeah, but I mean, the new one was, like, more serious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where the other one was kind of like a comedy, sort of.
or like an Jack action Dread, comedy. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the original comic book was a comedy.
Yeah, true.
It was, you know, pretty kind of zany. But, no, Stallone's Dread, I liked them both. I liked Stallone's Dread. You know, the only thing that I really can knock Stallone's Dread for is that he didn't wear his fucking mask. He only had it in a couple scenes.
Well, because he had in his contract, he's like, I don't want to like be in a movie and not be able to see my face in the movie.
Yeah.
Whereas that's one thing I liked about the remake.
That it's movie like looked great, though.
They
both look good.
That's the one thing that I liked about the remake. One was like it was a more serious tone, and two, the guy never took his mask off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I liked that.
Yeah, back to the zombie genre, I'd probably say that this movie really helped to inspire The Walking Dead. But I would say the old Walking Dead. You know, I'll be the first to admit that I like The Walking Dead, but only like maybe the first 5 seasons. After they left Terminus, it started to fall apart for me slowly. You know, as it went. But Walking Dead started off as a really good survival adventure story. With a bunch of horror in there. People were eligible for getting killed. Anybody could get killed in that series. But as it went on, it kind of mutated more into kind of soapy. You know, I just didn't really like it. And you knew that the core characters weren't going to get killed anymore. and I just didn't like the writing.
Yeah.
They're hiding behind a little bitty sheet metal, you know, hiding behind that. It's supposed to be blocking assault rifle fire. You know, no, it doesn't work. You know, there's a bunch of shit they did wrong. The tiger thing, the just, you know, certain characters, the way they were shown, I just thought it started to get really corny.
Yeah.
And Fear the Walking Dead, that never really took off. I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
No. I liked Salazar, but then they fucked that character up, and I just didn't like it. I checked out of him.
But yeah, so, like I was saying, the guy that wrote this movie was the same guy that wrote Dread. He was also the same guy that wrote Annihilation, which was a sci-fi movie that I actually really liked, that I think was kind of underrated. I bought that one as well. But yeah, so he said that he was actually inspired by... he had liked the 80s zombie movies, like all the Romero movies and stuff that he saw as a kid, and he was kind of into them. But then he kind of forgot about zombies, and still he started playing the Resident Evil video games, and he kind of got back into zombies again. But he has said that the main idea for 28 Days Later and for the fast zombies and everything like that not only came from Resident Evil, but also came from the movie The Day of the Triffids, which I thought was kind of interesting. But he said that was where he got the idea of somebody like waking up and like all the streets being deserted and stuff like that.
If you don't know The Day of the Triffids, it was an English movie. I think it was black and white, wasn't it?
I believe it was, yeah. I haven't seen it for a long time either.
Yeah, a bunch of alien seeds come down and meteorites. Blinds everybody. Blinds a lot of the people in England. And the seeds hatch into these alien plants that eat people. Walk around and eat people. It's great. Great movie.
I know.
It was kind of like a zombie movie.
Yeah, I loved it.
So most people were blind. Not everybody. So I think certain people were indoors. They were deep underneath the ground, and the light didn't blind them.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly where the light came from. It was just some kind of radiation. But it made you, because you were blind, it made you sit and duck for these damn walking plants.
Yeah.
And they just kind of crept along. They had mouths on them. Alien plants and tentacles and shit.
I remember the movie being really creepy. I think I read the book as well. John Wyndham wrote it.
Yeah. British soldiers were running around trying to machine gun them, and they were seemingly indestructible. Eventually, they figured out how to kill them. But
I think John Wyndham also wrote The Midwich Cuckoos, which was the... what was the movie with all the kids with the blonde hair that the aliens impregnated all the women at the same... What the fuck was the name of that movie?
I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about. Why I can't think of it right now. Village of the Damned. It was that was actually based on a book by John Wyndham also that was called The Midwich Cuckoos. Yeah. But yeah, so like I said, Day of the Triffids and Resident Evil and the George Romero movies were kind of a big inspiration to him when he wrote this. Now, 28 Days Later, like I said, it cost about £5 million to make. Even though I was watching one review of it earlier where he said it costs the same as a loaf of Wonder Bread. Only it's a £5 million loaf of Wonder Bread. Okay. But yeah, it cost £5 million to make. And, it actually ended up being, it did like pretty good in the UK, but when they released it in the US, it was only released on, I think, 1500 screens, and it made a shit ton of money. It made like $45 million just on like on a very limited release. So it actually ended up like being a really big hit. And it was actually even also a big critical hit. Like, I think it got pretty much, I think it was like 90-95% positive reviews. So, and it kind of went on to become, like I said, to become super, super influential. And could probably, between that and Resident Evil, that's probably the thing that kind of kickstarted the zombie genre that's still kind of going on to this day, although it seems like it's kind of going downhill a little bit in the most recent
I think a new years. Series is going to come and take Walking Dead's place, if you ask me, and that's going to be The Stand. It's rumored to be that there's going to be like a Netflix series. I think it's Netflix.
Well, again, that needs a series. Yeah. That book is so complicated.
Which, it's not a zombie movie, but it is an apocalypse movie.
Yeah.
You know, it starts off with a big plague that wipes everybody
out. Those still seem to be pretty popular. I mean, if some of the later, you know, I mean... I think most recent horror movies that have done well, like either critically or, you know, at the box office, they seem to be more like supernatural horror or more like psychological horror. So I think you're seeing kind of less of zombie movies. Maybe people are sick of them. But I definitely feel like a lot of stuff that's like gone to, that's, you know, kind of done the horror convention circuit and the like turning up on Netflix and stuff, there's still like a lot of post-apocalyptic movies.
Yeah, I'd like to see how this is going to be done, because The Stand had... biblical apocalyptic themes to it, about the devil coming back and you know, the war of Armageddon between good survivors and evil survivors, and That was a badass book.
It really was. Yeah, and like I said, I would love to see like a really good adaptation of that. And like I said, it seems like a good time to do it because one, Stephen King is like super hot right now. Again, like they're doing so many remakes and so many like adaptations of his work. And I feel like there's really a market out there for it if they could do it without fucking it up, you know? So that
like
would be
they
good.
Do.
Well, although, like I said, some of the ones they did on Netflix, like
it was awesome,
like Gerald's Game, amazing.
Didn't see that one.
Oh yeah, it's good. It's on Netflix. They also did that one about the fucking farmer that killed that. That was more like a
Gerald's Game. That was they
handcuffed to the bed.
Yeah,
that was a great movie.
Yeah.
All right. So 28 Days Later had a sequel called 28 Weeks Later, starring one of my favorite actors, Robert Carlyle, and it was actually for a sequel. I actually liked it. I'm not going to say it was better than the original, but it was almost as good. I liked it a lot. I think I saw that in the theater, too. I might do a separate review on that because I really liked that movie. Also, now, Danny Boyle has repeatedly said that he's kind of thinking, you know, oh, maybe I'll do, like, a third one in the trilogy called 28 Months Later, but he's never got around to it. He's been saying that for, like, fucking 12 years, and they never got around to doing it, so I don't know if they're going to do it at this point because it's been such a long time. There's also been a couple of, like, graphic novel things that were like filling in gaps in the story. One of them was even done by Steve Niles, who very famously did 30 Days of Night. And as I said, this movie was pretty much responsible for, I mean, the remake of Dawn of the Dead that came out, I think 2 years after this, had fast zombies in it.
Yeah.
And this, actually, I'm kind of ambivalent about remakes. That one kicked ass. That was like a really good...
It was good, but they shouldn't have had the damn fast zombies in it. They should have left them Romero zombies.
I'm just saying, they did fast zombies because of this.
The story was good, though.
And like I said, I mean, so many zombie movies came out. Shaun of the Dead came out 2 years after this. Also an amazing flick. Black Sheep, Planet Terror. Dead Snow, which I fucking love. Nazi zombies. Zombieland. Oh, you would like Dead Snow.
I haven't seen
the sequel, but Zombieland, you would probably like that too. It's like a zombie comedy.
As far as British zombie movies go, I'd probably give it to Shaun of the Dead.
Although, like I said, that's like a horror comedy.
Yeah, I like that.
This is more a straight horror movie.
Some of the Romero ones had a lot of comedy, and they were almost
true.
Like
well,
that
they were
too.
Satirical,
right? So I like that tone. It's kind of hard to take the zombie subject seriously through the whole movie. You know what I mean? But you know, I guess you can.
Well, and this one, I think it's actually more realistic because it's not reanimated corpses.
Yeah.
It's just like people, and you could, like, it's exaggerated, but you could see something like that happening.
Right.
Like that there's some kind of virus got released and it makes everybody crazy.
And let me just back up and tell people that we always call these zombie movies. These all came from Night of the Living Dead. And they were not zombies. They were ghouls.
Ghouls, yeah.
Zombies were never mentioned in having anything to do with that movie. That was something that the audience kind of put that into
because a zombie is not really a dead person. It's a person that's got buried and then brought back.
You use a voodoo ritual to fake a person's death. They, you know, they die and then you dig them up because they're catatonic and you make them your slave and then you have them working in your sugarcane plantation.
Yeah.
This is some shit that they actually did in Haiti. A real zombie movie would probably be Serpent in the Rainbow.
That's actually one of the few. I mean, other than, like, back in the old days in the 30s and 40s, you know, they made I Walked with a Zombie, White Zombie, you know, that had Bela Lugosi and stuff like that in it, that actually did the Haitian zombie angle.
Yeah.
And then I feel like they didn't really do that much anymore. Serpent in the Rainbow is really the only significant example I can think of. That came out in the 90s, right, I think.
I thought it was late 80s.
Oh, maybe 80s. Yeah, maybe it was 86.
I think I just come. Yeah, I was getting, I was.
Yeah, maybe it was 86.
In high school, I think, yeah. It was, at the time, I didn't like it.
I love Serpent
in
the Rainbow.
Maybe if I'd see it again, maybe I'd like it. But at the time, I didn't really like it.
I love Serpent in the Rainbow. And honestly, it's on my list to review. I just haven't got around to it yet.
I haven't seen this in a long time.
Yeah. And like you said, there were also like a ton of books that came out in the wake of this.
Yeah.
World War Z, which was subsequently made into a not very good movie. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, Warm Bodies, all those kind of like. So there was like a whole... It was almost like a whole cultural explosion of, like, zombies fucking everywhere.
It's a zombie craze.
And a lot of it came from this movie, and this and Resident Evil, that's pretty much it, like, kickstarted the whole thing.
And if you haven't seen the original Romero's Night of the Living Dead, go ahead and unsub.
Well,
you gotta see that one.
Yeah,
it's free. That's public domain. You can see that free anywhere.
Yeah, you can see that anywhere.
And the way that movie is made, that's still a classic to this day.
$68,000 they made that for.
And to me, what makes that movie is the damn announcer on the television set in the house. That's part of it. There, which is their only link to the outside world. And just the cast. You know, they're not all great actors, but they have a really good leading man. What's the name of that character?
Ben,
that's right. Yeah, Ben does a great job.
Well, that's why they put him in the lead. They said he was the best actor we knew.
Yeah, the whole thing about having a black leading man was like revolutionary in the day. Oh, man, that's awesome. Totally by accident.
Well, Romero it was just, accidental. He totally just said accident. He was the best actor we knew, so we just gave him the lead.
Right.
And it just kind of inadvertently turned out to be like this kind of statement.
Yeah, and that whole script takes on a totally different angle.
It does.
When you have a black leading man in it.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a strong...
I have a hard time believing that was completely accidental, though.
Well, he's the best actor that they had.
Because, I mean, George Romero is well known for putting, like, a lot of social commentary into his zombie movies in particular.
I think it just worked.
Yeah.
It just worked, though. It worked with the story, and it enhanced that story. Just like, you know, making Alien 1, making Ripley female was totally...
That was also accidental.
By accident.
It was written as a genderless character.
And, you know, Ridley Scott just went, you know, was asked, is Ripley a female? And he goes, no. But yeah.
It's like, yeah, I guess it could be. He didn't really imagine, like, either.
Yeah, and both of those movies just came away real strong with, you know what I mean, with flips like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kind of flip it.
Well, sometimes I think it's better when you write a character, particularly for a movie, not so much in a book, I guess, but, you know, particularly in a movie, if you just write a character, like, they could be either thing, and then, you know, they can just cast it as either thing.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, Ben makes it to the very, very end and just looks out the window and gets shot in the head
Shot
by rednecks and a zombie hunting team. And, it looked a lot like a lynch mob coming for him.
Well,
didn't
yeah,
it?
That's exactly that was what the it idea. Looked like. Yeah. And, that's kind of why that happened.
Yeah.
Now, I should add that I don't actually have the Blu-ray of this, of 28 Days Later. Now, I've heard that there were three alternate endings. Because this movie, like, if you watch the theatrical cut, at least in the United States, and spoiler alert, this has a fairly positive ending. It's like, you know, the nice, like, teddy bear character dad, he gets killed. A bunch of people get killed, but Jim survives, Selena survives, and the girl survives, like I said, forming this kind of, like, new family. Now, they have, you know, the zombies, or the infected people, are actually starving to death. So they're basically just waiting around for them to all starve to death, and then they figure everything's going to be okay. They kind of implied that they thought that the shit was happening all around the world, but they find out at the end that probably it was only Britain, so, you know, they could, like, move somewhere else later on, like, potentially. So it has kind of a hopeful ending of, like, them, like, out in this kind of, like, house, like, out in the middle of nowhere, and they're, you know, they see a plane coming over, and they, like, have a big thing, like, made out of cloth out in the thing that says hello, like, and, you know, like, asking them for help and stuff, and that's where it ends. Now, they also filmed a couple of other endings, and I haven't seen them, but I heard that pretty much all of the other endings, they filmed two of them, and one of them was just storyboarded. All three of the other endings had Jim dying at the end. I think one of them, he was, like, being experimented on like a monkey, like, at the beginning. One of them, I think, didn't even have the military people in it. It just, like, happened in a hospital, and there was, like, some other shit going on. But, yeah, I think he died in all three of the alternate endings. And so some people thought that, like, some reviews I read of it, like I said, they're pretty much all positive, but some people were like, oh, I thought the ending was too happy. It's like, it should have been more of, like, a downbeat ending, because that's probably what would really happen.
Yeah.
So I think some people thought that maybe they should have had everybody die at the end, or they should have had Jim die at the end, or whatever. But I don't know. I kind of like that little positive thing at the end. And like I said, when they made the sequel, where it kind of where the outbreak kind of, like, spread further outside of Britain and various other things, you know, so I think it fit in better with that. But I can see what you're saying, because I'm kind of a fan of downbeat endings. Like, I kind of like horror movies that aren't afraid to bum you out. So I can see why that might piss people off.
I tell you what, these fast zombie movies, though, they fucked up Will Smith's I Am Legend, if you ask me.
Oh my God, don't even get me started on that
piece
of shit.
They fucked that movie up.
Like, that why? Movie was why did they even make...
They should have never done that.
It just made me so angry.
Yeah.
I think I paid to see that in theater, too, and then I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Because I love the book so much, and I love Last Man on Earth, and I love The Omega Man.
Yeah, they should have made it The Omega Man.
Well, yeah, they should have.
And had the albino, psychopathic mutants... that could talk, the family. You know,
yeah.
That movie. If you want to see a badass apocalyptic, we did a review on it.
Yeah, we did Omega Man.
Go see Omega.
We haven't done Last Man on Earth though, the Vincent Price one. Yeah. And actually, that one is the closest to the book.
Yeah.
I mean, the Omega Man it's a great flick, but it took some liberties. Like, it's not the same. The Last Man on Earth, it wasn't exactly like the book, but it's the closest. Even though it's named the same as the book, which none of the other adaptations were, it was like, it deviated wildly from the source material, and in ways that I think were ultimately detrimental, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Weak movie.
But yeah, so if you like zombie movies and you haven't seen this one, then what the fuck? Because this is like one of the building blocks of the modern zombie genre, and probably you need to see it. So go check it out. And I think that will do it for this movie retrospective. And remember, if you like the show, like, share, subscribe on all your social media. Remember, if you would like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or you can go to our blog, 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a button in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. That would be much appreciated. Remember, we do these movie retrospectives that come out every Friday. We also do our regular episodes, come out every Tuesday, and we do 13 o'clock matinee, new movies in the theater, that comes out every Sunday. We will see you next time. Bye.